session number 11750, Reel 4.
Mr. Fred Lineker, Reel 4. We were talking about your duties as storeman while you were at Yeovil.
Yeah.
Now, as storeman, did that mean you were excused certain elements of military duties or parades and things?
Yes, yes. There was what they called an employed men's parade, you see, which our friend Mr. Spike Jennings took, obviously, on his favourite square, and where he had the storemen, the cooks, and the bottle washers, everybody who had a job was there and had to be there. And he enjoyed himself with you lot for about half an hour or so, and that was the only parade we did. It excused us from guard duties. It was a perk, in other words, a perk in the army.
Now, did you still have to do exercises? Were you also part of a platoon in a fighting?
I was D Company storeman, and you could be come in action. You could become used as a runner. You know what I mean by
that? Runner.
Yes. Yeah.
Taking messages.
Now, you could be used that.
Did you practice
we wasn't
that?
Excused. We wasn't excused route marches in Honiton, full marching order, or FSMO. And one particular one happened to be about 12 miles one day, which I don't think I'd ever walked more than about 5 in all my life in one session. But this was a seemingly an endless 12 miles. And which never seemed to run, of course. And getting, I'm arriving back at the Honiton. At that time, the wife was down because it was prior to embarkation leave. She was down, and I had a sleeping out pass. And all I could do when I got home up that was sit on the bed, and she took my boots off, my socks, and treated the blisters. And that is most of the, shall we say, the army. We'd done the initial training. These employed men's parade, and it was just to keep you up to scratch, I think. I mean, there wasn't even any PT involved for us, like the lads out on the main street in the morning at breakfast time doing those arms outward stretch and all this performance. I was sat in the storeroom.
What about during an exercise? Would you practice being a runner? Would you go with the officer, or did
well,
you not bother?
No, as I said, during an exercise, we were mostly helping the cooks out with the grub stakes, you see, on the portable fires where they had what would they be now? It was equivalent to what we have the gas now.
Calor gas.
Well, it was a type of a calor gas, but it was more like the old paraffin thing that you saw on the market in the old days, the flare thing. But it was a force blown thing down a tunnel effect with the utensils on the top, just to warm it up, warm the water up to get brew up the tea and so on. Because the food, as I said, was pre-prepared and in containers which kept it hot. You see, all it was mashing tea up then, and so on, you know.
Now, you said it was a perk.
I thought it was a perk, and a reasonably cushy number, because it got me out of the usual routine of a lad in a platoon.
Would you have liked, I mean, were you...
I still met the people... friends and mates there. I still met them, even in that capacity. I wasn't divided from seeing anybody. I wasn't sort of isolated.
Would you rather have been a fighting soldier? I mean, you were a fighting soldier when you went to...
Would
you rather carried on being a normal private, or did you appreciate...
I appreciated that. The only thing I didn't appreciate, that it meant me meeting Spike Jennings about once a week. And he was my only ogre. other than that, and once I'd seen him in off for 1 week, I was quite pleased then for the remainder, you see.
You didn't like him?
No,
all.
I didn't.
He'd already got on...
He hadn't pinpointed me at all. I'd pinpointed him, but as far as I was concerned, I could have been a pebble. I could have been a pebble on the parade ground. He would be anybody who he thought was clean, sprightly, smart. He'd pick him out. I mean, you get the kooks coming on parade, who's been messing about in, shall we say, as them in the afternoon on a parade, and in the morning they've been messing about with those sawyers, with coal, thick black smoke hanging round all the face. They've managed to shave, but they've got all soot round the face and all round the kit, and the gear, and they amble on parade like that. Well, he has a holiday with them. Whether it's to give him practice how to sherrick others, I don't know. You see, we was training him to keep up his attitude to people.
Right. So you were doing this at Yeovil. Is that where you were next door to the pub?
Yeah. Well, we had the skittle alley.
Did you drink? Were you getting free drink there?
Cider was the drink there. Rough and smooth. You could stand a spoon in it, the rough. And you could drink it all night until you went to the door. And then you fell over when the night air hit you. It had no effect, seemed to, while you was inside. And you could get a pint for 5p. Much the same as the price of beer. But it was potent. Lethal.
Was there any trouble with drunkenness? I mean, when they did get to the door?
Well, I can't recollect any trouble, but, I mean, they must have had the fill. I didn't have to move a yard. If I could sit on my blankets there and just knock on the connecting, what do you call it, and it opened up, and there was a glass of a pint of cider there. I was happy.
Right, now you went from Yeovil down to Honiton, and that's where they were doing a lot of...
Well, we was billeted on the main street at Honiton. That's a little place where there's more pubs in the length of a market town street than anywhere in England, I believe. You can ball over them, one after the other. And we was in sort of a series of private houses that had been knocked into two or three at a time, such as a section had sleep in one bedroom, all round the wall, on the floor, on a palliasse, like a front bedroom of a house would have a section of a platoon would sleep on there. In the downstairs room at the back, I had my stores. In the front room, if you went in the door, on the left was the CO's office.
What did you have much contact with the CO? Do you mean the company CO, I think?
Captain Clay. Oh, yes. Because by virtue of him having contact with Jackie Hudson, the CQMS. Because he had to indent for pay and so on, you see.
What about the senior, the colonel and, you know, the adjutant and people like that?
Never saw much of him. We had Beat at one time. Colonel Beat, I think he's in there anyway. We had a series, Mad Jackson, he was one.
Why was he called Mad?
Well, they said he would do things that no other person on this earth would do.
Such as?
He got killed, you know. I think it was at the Marath.
That was later, though.
Yes, later. Marath Line. After I was captured, that was.
There were some exercises on the moors, as you in the middle
yes.
of winter.
Oh, yes.
Did you have much? Do you remember those at all? Because you'd be out with the cooks.
We were out with the cooks, and of course they was doing running round in the snow and the ale and what have you, and we was quite comfortable in our three tonner waiting for them to complete their exercise and come and queue up for food. And Freddie was nicely dry.
So this is where you really had an advantage.
Yes.
What state were the troops in? Because it was supposed to be
Very arduous, you know. It was, I mean, to come from Civvy Street and then start doing that sort of work, running around Dartmoor, with all your kit on, Bren guns and God knows what, the depth of winter. There was one boy who killed S with his SP. He had there was an accident on one of the exercises at A.B. Clark, he was with. He was the driver for him. I think he was his batman as well. Major Clark, A.B. Clark. He took a group out of the box.
Now, I didn't mean to mention it, but Clark was actually in the book, supposed to be the captain of D Company. But you're sure
Only for a short time. Captain Clay must have gone away, say, on a course. Something like that. You know, I used to bob him off. And Clark, he'd look after it while he come back, sort of. Because he was a second in command of the battalion. At one period. A little Scotsman, we had it.
Right. Now, so what's the next... I mean, you've been doing these exercises. You know, you'd had a fairly cushy time of it.
Oh, yeah.
When did you first hear you were going overseas?
Well, we went at the end of May, we sailed. So it must have been, if I have to go back, use that as a guide, it must have been the early part of May, when they start coming round and issuing tropical kit, then there's rumour starts then. Obviously, we're not going to Iceland with the 16th battalion. I think it was that, the 16th or 11th. So it's somewhere warm. But when? And then, of course, we got embarkation leave. So she said, Dorothy came down for the last few days as we had, and then that was the worst. That was worse than when the morning I was on Victoria Station and we were going to Preston. Never mind going abroad, because then it was going the other side of the world. We didn't know where, and we left Honiton.
You had the injections as well.
Yeah. Now that would be the period, you see, when I was talking about Old Spikey.
Now, you had a reaction, did you? Because you said you had your arm inside you.
Well, when I had the injection, I found out that it was more comfortable to hold it like this on your stomach, you see, nice and, you see. And, of course, I'm undone, aren't I, to do it, are you? And I'm walking down the high street in Honiton, and who should happen to be coming up was himself. And I was pulled up, walking to the town in a slovenly manner. Wouldn't accept any explanation about what at all, about injections, nothing.
I mean, did it just hurt, or did you have more... Was it...
Well, the feeling, when you think about it, was... It's similar to having an injection in your gums to have a tooth out.
So it was just a bit stiff?
Stiff and uncomfortable.
But it didn't swell up? I mean, your arm didn't swell up?
Oh, no, no more than you'd be if you're vaccinated.
So nothing
too bad. I suppose I was nursing myself. And if he hadn't have been there, I'd have nursed myself and got away with it.
Were there any other preparations before you? Did they give you lectures about how to behave or anything like that?
No, because we didn't know where we were going, did we? I mean, if they'd have given us lectures about the pygmies in Africa, we'd have known been going there, wouldn't we? Or the dingo dogs in Australia, we knew we were going there. But they didn't prepare you for nothing. The only thing you was prepared with is that you've got a pair of khaki shorts and a khaki shirt.
So you knew it was hot?
So it was hot.
Now, had you been integrated into the battalion by now? You know, when you said, when you joined, you know, almost a year before.
In other words, but it wasn't completely void of this, them and us. It wasn't void, but it wasn't as pronounced.
So it was on the wane.
I suppose in another 10 years later, it disappeared. It's fuller. But it wasn't as pronounced as when we walked in the place at Rugeley.
Now, what did you have? Had you been given a pride in the Durham Light Infantry or in the 8th Battalion?
Oh, well, yes. Another. Well, you've just reminded me of another of his favourite little eccentricities with Mr. Spike, and that was having your hat set on your head, dead centre, your forage hat, because that was the thing. You couldn't have it on one side like the RASC or what have you. It had to be dead centre. And in some respects, what a burk you looked. You're not sorry, is it?
No, it's all right.
Oh, no, you looked stupid, some of them. It was proper a sissy, what do you call it, way of putting a hat on.
And that was enforced throughout the battalion?
Throughout the Durhams. That's how you wore your hat. And if it was on one side, or uneven, Mr. Spike had you with the short ones.
Was that the Durhams or just the 8th Battalion?
The Durhams.
Now, were you proud of that distinction later on, or did you still think you looked a Burke?
Well, I still thought we looked a Burke, and I don't see what the necessity was to stick it on your head like that.
Were there any regiments?
The only thing I felt proud of, I think that I was of a regiment that did 120 to the minute, and we could do it and all. The fella, the quick mark, the fast marching rate. Got to walk quick now. And the other thing was, the Durham people, I think, are one of the best. No, they're one of the best type of people. The generous, good mates. I'm not talking about those who lam it off and say, well, I was in the Terriers and all that. I'm talking about Geordies as a whole. And like we talk about Yorkshire people, like we talk about the Scottish or the Scousers. I think they're one of the best in the British Isles for homeliness, loyalty. Great people.
So there was enough of them there amongst the privates to make you feel.
Yes,
right.
Like little Danny Fairbairn. I'm talking about that. As I said, he was a private. He was a Geordie.
What about the fighting history of the regiment? Were you aware of that? I mean, it has got quite a famous record.
The only thing I knew about the Durhams as a fighting regiment, as I say, we wasn't cut out for soldiers, was we? Let's face it. We weren't interested whether we had an army or whether we hadn't. When I was like 18, 19, the only fighting of the regiment that we knew about and we could talk about because we'd had it slung in our ear so much was the BEF.
So you hadn't heard about their old...
None of the old, what they did at crime in the Crimea and what they'd done somewhere else. No. I didn't even know they had a regiment in Iceland till I come home.
Was there any rivalry, I mean, you know, between the battalions within the DLI? I mean, how did you feel about the 9th and the 6th?
Well, I don't think there was any rivalry because I knew that when we were in the box in the desert that the 6th, 8th and 9th were there. It was the 151 Brigade and I were in the 50th Divy. And they won't say, oh, that bloody lot in the sixth, or that bloody lot in the ninth, a load of bloody nonsense. No! I suppose the ninth said, didn't say anything about the eighth. There was a family.
Right, so what happened when you went overseas then? You left Honiton around
21st of May. 21st of May, we sailed. And we went up to Gourock on the Clyde. I was taken out by tender. I've got a picture of it there. I got hold of that. To this Duchess of Richmond, a CPR liner, Canadian Pacific, 23,000 tonner. And we got on that, and of course we eventually sailed. And what a feeling you get when it's going down the Clyde, and you're looking, it doesn't matter whether it's Scotland, England, Ireland or Wales, you're leaving your homeland, aren't you? I mean, I didn't see Manchester when I was leaving, but I was leaving Sail, you see. And going down there, it was rough, I'll tell you. Not mean the weather, I mean the feeling. And we had the Brigadier on our ship. And I'll never forget it. And D Company was on it. Of course, there was bloody loads of others and all. There was, beside the Durham, I think there was Rath and what have you. And of course, this particular morning, we paraded on the, call it the promenade deck. And he has to show this Brigadier off. And in 15 platoon, I think he was, a bunch of them gone now, there was a chap there, little fella, Matty Stringer, from Bellevue, about 4 foot nothing, he was, you know, funny little fella. And the Brigadier goes up to him and says, you were rather small, aren't you? He says, you know, really, you shouldn't be in this draft at all. And I'll never forget it. And Matty says, it's no use talking like that now. We're bloody well going, aren't we? You see? As something to that effect, you know. And how funny it was.
Did he get into trouble?
No. I mean, it would be taken as... Let's face it, even the bloody Brigadier were going, I bet he didn't fancy it, would he? And he could feel for him just like he felt himself.
Did you know who he was? It'd be what he was 151
Brigade.
151 Brigade. Did you know his name?
I might have known it then. I can't remember it now. No, no.
Now, where were you put on the ship? Do you remember? What was your billet like in the ship?
Well, it was below in hammocks, slung in hammocks. And there was no stores there because it was all packed up and in the hold, you see. I had no nice blankets to lie on.
Now, hang on, had you had to pack it up then? That had been part of your job, had it?
Create and do, yeah.
And who'd helped you with that? Because that's quite a big job, isn't it?
Well... There'd be somebody out, one of the platoons or something like that, you know. It could be a fatigue man, a roster to do it, go and help the stores pack up. See, I couldn't have done it myself.
So you packed it up and then put it in a three-tonner?
And that's it.
And then you didn't know
Never
what
seen nothing no more then. So I lost all my perks on the boat.
So you would, whereabouts?
I was part and parcel of everyday life, such as parades and that, wasn't I? On a ship.
How did you? I mean, you were. Was it crowded on the deck you were?
Well, you hadn't much room to move about because there were slung like hammocks along between posts and what have you. And then we'd got the deck to walk round, but it seemed to be endless parades and what was it when it's alarm.
Boat drill,
endless.
I'll come to them. But what about the hammock? How did you manage with that? Because
that was a laugh a minute trying to get in one of them, wasn't it? But by the time we'd been 8 weeks at sea, you could get in and out of it quite easily, like a matelot.
You had trouble at first, then.
Well, yes, it's a work of art, isn't it?
In what way?
Getting in and getting out.
So you fell out a few times?
I fell out, yes. Oh, aye.
What about seasickness? Was that a problem?
No, because I've always sailed well.
What about the rest of them, the people who were...
Oh, aye. Plenty of spewing up, yeah.
Did that not put you off?
No, because ever since I was little, I've always gone to... I've had relatives in Highland, and from 4 or 5 year old, we used to go across from Mollyhead to Greenore, across the Irish Sea, you see. And I always liked sailing. It didn't affect me, no, and anybody else was sick, it didn't affect me, no.
What about the food? Was that, I mean, sometimes it's worse than usual on a ship. Was that all right?
Homemade bread. Yes, oh, aye, homemade bread. The food was very good. Well, not very good. I won't go too extreme. I won't say very good. But it was palatable. Yes, it was quite good for saying where you want on a boat in the middle of the ocean.
Now, you were on constant parades, you said.
Well, it seemed to be...
What were the parades?
Because there was nothing else. There was nothing else for you. Boat drill, XPT, PT on the deck and all this caper. And then... I mean, there was no room to have games and things. I mean, you know what you do when you're on a cruise. There was none of that performance. There was a swimming area, and then a boxing. They got formed a little boxing group to still keep you fit and use your calories up.
Did
in
you
other
box
words.
At all?
Had a bit of a do. Never suited me, that performance. No.
Why not? You didn't like...
No. Where was the end of it coming to? It was only a matter of keeping your calories down, wasn't it?
So you didn't like all these parades. You said boat drill. You kept doing that...
Well, it seemed to be constant. And I suppose it was necessary because at that particular time that we sailed, the Bismarck was behind. I was behind.
Did you know that at the time?
No. No, but they said they said there was. You know how you get the. How can I put it? The not telepathy, the bush.
Bush telegraph.
Yeah, the bush telegraph. Where there's smoke, there's fire, but you can't really say it's true. It could be a rumour and there could be something in it. You follow? You had that feeling that there was something somewhere that you... They were doing this far, this a lot of this here boat drill performance. It seemed to me too much for what was happening, you know.
Did you hear about the Hood being sunk? Because they're supposed to have put the notices up and people are supposed to have known.
Well, I never saw any notices. What ship was that on?
On the Duchess.
Well, I never seen them.
So you didn't hear about
them? I might have seen them, but I can't recall now of ever seeing one.
So it didn't make an impression on you at the time?
No. All I wanted was to get there and off the... Not because I didn't like sailing, because I thought it safer on terra firma.
Were you worried about U-boats?
Of course, yes. And when these rumours was, these undercurrent waves was it was knocking about, you know, this talk, it was, it was uneasy, and yet you might be thinking you're uneasy, unnecessary. And yet there must be something in it.
Do you remember the stop-off?
Durban.
Do you remember?
Freetown was the first one. Freetown, Sierra Leone.
You didn't get ashore there?
No. The Free French.
Do you remember did the local natives come out?
They came out in the boats and you threw a penny over and they'd go right, dive right to the bottom, bring the coin up what you'd thrown. Yeah, to come out flogging the stuff.
Would you buy stuff?
No. What with? We haven't much money, had we? If you threw a penny, you wanted entertainment for it, didn't you? Yeah.
Now, in the thing, it mentions that people were buying things, but it was stopped when they noticed a gas cape going over the side.
Oh, now,
were
well,
you,
some...
Were you, no, I just mean, were you, I mean, stores is your thing. Were you aware of that sort of thing?
I wasn't available, was there, the stores?
So it would just be someone's personal...
If I threw a gas cape over, it would be my own, wouldn't it? not somebody else's spare.